Well, you are listening to KCAW in Sitka. It is just about 3 o'clock, and I have Molly Kabler in here with me to do the garden show.
It's time now for the pop-up garden show.
Do-do-do-do.
Thanks for letting me come in on your regular afternoon, and I'm excited to talk about growing vegetables.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. Actually, I'm kind of liking this half music, half garden show sort of format here. It's working for me. I hope it's working for the listeners. I know some of you will be able to listen to the show during this hour. Maybe others, I guess I'm apologizing to those of you who can't, but there will be a different time for probably for the next one.
More than likely.
Anyway, here we are now, and we're kind of thinking about vegetables. And thinking about, I'm actually like madly thinking about everything, trying to get my garden like all together and growing and get it all settled so that I can take off and abandon it is usually what happens. But a little bit of care now makes that very possible.
So the classic vegetables to grow, if that's what you're going to do, are peas, potatoes, and root crops.
Mm-hmm. And lettuce.
Yes.
And lettuce. You got to have lettuce. And like now, if you say, well, I'm going to throw kale in there too, because there's a lot of kale madness that is still going on. And it works pretty well for our climate. So my not so classic vegetables that I really love to grow.
Yes.
Are there carrots? Carrots are probably my favorite. I planted an entire bed in carrots, which is about 3 by 12 feet.
Okay, so let's talk about carrots,
okay.
Obviously. And so what varieties did you plant?
I planted a pile of different varieties. Romance, Yaya, Mokum, let's see, Baltimore. There's like three or four more. I'll have to look it up. I usually plant several varieties at once, and I like the regular old Nantes type. I've tried some of the different colored ones, and they're kind of pretty, but they just don't do as well for me. So I kind of stick with my standard orange carrots, and that seems to work pretty well. Now, this is the bed that I put the most time into prepping every year, and I alternate which bed gets the carrots. So I rotate as best I can, but I spend a lot of time fussing with that bed, making sure that it's really clear and there's not like big chunks of anything in the soil. So I will I'll dig it, then I'll rake it, then I'll wiggle my fingers in it. I mean, I get like, it's a $1,000 bed by the time I'm done with it. Not the $50 bed, it's the $1,000 bed. And it's pretty, I have organic soils. I mean, I haul sand in and all that. So it has a mixture of really deep, well, beyond well-composted organics, and then some sand, and I throw some bone meal in there, usually a little bit of lime, not too much, just a little, and then cross my fingers and hope I did it right.
I'm sure you did.
But, we'll see.
You know, the thing about carrots is they're a root crop,
mm-hmm.
and whenever you're growing a root crop, it generally requires some pretty good fertility. They've got
yes.
to grow a big volume
mm-hmm.
of something that has a lot of nutrition in it. So you need to have good nutrition in your soil if you're going to have strong carrots or big carrots.
Yeah.
And you also have to have, as you're talking about, you said clear. And by
yes.
what you mean by clear is clear of sticks, clear
right.
of rocks,
oh, yeah.
clear of clumps. I mean, really the loosest,
mm-hmm.
Loamiest, sandiest,
mm-hmm.
most beautiful
mm-hmm.
soil is really where you're going to get that carrot productivity.
It is gorgeous stuff. So yeah, I mean, I really do fuss with it, and I'm not that. I'll dig and do about half of those steps with my regular vegetable beds, but my carrots, because I like them so much, really get the best I can possibly do. And I have a couple other tricks that I really like. One is I buy pelleted seed because
yeah.
I really got tired of throwing a lot of seed out and then, or you can tell, it's like I'm really good for the first, couple of rows, and I'll explain what I mean by rows in a second. But then towards the end, it's like chaos in terms of seed. So I was wasting a lot of seed. And so I know pelleted seed's more expensive, but it's worth it to me.
So there's a couple other tricks. One is that you can use seed and sand or seed and something else in a shaker bottle.
Mm-hmm.
That can help you have a nice distribution of seeds. I don't know what other tricks there are. I guess that's the main
that is a good trick.
You know, that's the main one. And then the other thing is to just make peace with it and know that you're going to be thinning.
Right.
And it's absolutely critical that you thin carrots. They need shoulder room. If you have them really tightly packed together, you will get a lot of tops and not a lot of carrots.
Yeah.
And that's not the point of growing carrots. I mean, the tops are edible, but they're nothing like eating a fresh garden juicy carrot.
They're so good.
So, you know, in the past few years, we've had trouble with germination for carrots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I've heard a couple people say already that they've got good carrot germination going on.
Well, what I found was really important to get my carrots to germinate is that the beds stay evenly moist. So it could be that the rain is distributing itself just right, or people manage to plant just right. I haven't had mine in the ground for that long, so I can't tell you about how their germination will be. But I do try to really kind of carefully keep it moist. And then, again, I throw the row cover over it, and mostly to help keep it moist, just to keep it out of that direct baking sun and to keep the birds out of it. I mean, birds are great. I love birds, but they'll dig in that soil that I've like nurtured and make a mess out of the carrot seeds. And no doubt they probably eat some of them. So I use that. But I think moisture is key. I mean, I'll probably water it again if it doesn't rain here.
Really, kind of a good way to think about it is when you have tiny seed, that means you're going to have a really tiny seedling. And a tiny seedling needs all the more care and love,
mm-hmm.
right? So your big fat seeds, they can withstand a lot more dryness than those little tiny carrot seeds. I don't know why the greens seem to tolerate the variable conditions a little bit better than the carrots, but yeah, carrots like that really, really get after that idea of keeping them evenly moist. And we don't usually worry about watering outside here because, you know, we live in
usually
a rainforest.
Waters, yeah.
But really watching the bed, and it doesn't take a whole lot of watering when it's that seed, it's the new seed, because there's no deep roots. It's just that very top.
Yeah, it's the one time that superficial watering is just fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll just spray it really lightly, and then I'll you know, throw the row cover back on it. I mean, one of the key things about carrots, though, is they do need sun. So I should have said that straight up, is that sun, it's not something you can manufacture, your aspect. So having a sunny spot does seem to be pretty critical for carrots as well. I mean, someone could prove me wrong, no doubt, but that's worked really well for me. And then, you know, I have raised beds that dry up warm. They just, and I'm still eating carrots from last year.
So we don't have any great, any really serious pests around carrots. So carrots are a great vegetable to grow. And as we've said, you know, all this care about the soil preparation, and you should have pretty good luck. And, of course, your best sun, if you want good carrots, is going to be ideal.
Yeah, I guess I was just looking, and it was like most of my carrots definitely fall well into the traditional ones, but Romance has done well for me, and Yaya, definitely two that I've grown a number of times, Baltimore, Merida, Mokum, of course. I'm just like flipping through. But the other one I have, we'll see how I like it, is called Giants of Colmar. I mean, sometimes the names just grab me and there's really nothing I can do about it. I got to get that carrot. I have Nectar, Napa, and Nelson. So I really do. I like plant little kind of, I do crossways rows, and then usually I'll fill in between. So I don't like, my bed's like 3 feet wide. And I don't do rows like the length of that, the 12 feet in length. I do them across the first planting. And those rows are not very far apart, my little mini rows. And then occasionally if they don't germinate well, I'll just like start tossing seeds in between and then thin those. But so I end up with a pretty dense bed of carrots. And that seems, because I can get at my carrot bed from both sides, it works really well. I don't have to walk in the middle of it.
So unfortunately, it's experience that's going to tell you how dense to let your carrots be for productivity. If you don't have a, if your soil's a light on the nutritious side, you probably want to not try and grow as dense a carrots. But, you know, so you're finding that balance between enough shoulder room and enough productivity. And carrots don't have to be in a row per se. They can just be in a mat
right,
or
in
a net.
Scatters. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I give mine bone meal, which is pretty high in phosphorus. And then I'll use, I use my compost, which is pretty high in coffee, which coffee is actually a pretty good nitrogen source. When I get it, I use herring eggs. So, I mean, I do try to really feed my garden up because I grow a lot of my vegetables pretty densely. So I need to, like, I need to replenish that, the soil nutrients.
Every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there it's, I'm demanding a lot out of that soil. And so I need to give. I need to give back.
Yep. I know we've had good reports on white satin. Some people just think white satin is fantastic and have had really good luck with it. That's the white carrot.
Mm-hmm.
Other people say doesn't do anything compared to the other regular orange ones. And a lot of us have been entranced by purple haze, is the it's kind of an orange core, but it's purple on the outside. And it's awfully fun to grow. But I find that that's probably a sidelight. It's not the most productive in our climate. And I didn't think it was any tastier than some of the other ones. So if you want to entertain yourself by growing the colored carrots, by all means, go for it. But
yeah,
we haven't found them to be any more productive or tasty than any of the other ones.
And I will admit that I look for the orange ones, then I look for entertaining names. And then I suppose that's why they give them those names, is because we will latch onto them and they have some appeal to us. But check them all out. I mean, if you have enough space to grow different varieties, the thing to do is to try to keep track of what you put where and how they do. So you can, you know, ones that did well for you, you can get more. instead of going, now, what was that? Yeah, it definitely helps, especially if all of your carrots look roughly the same. You know,
They're all orange.
Huh, crazy. They're all Nantes. They're all kind of traditional looking. I don't know what that was. So, yeah, I draw a map of my carrot bed. So, okay, I think I've spent 11 minutes talking about carrots. It's
great,
almost
let's
as bad
move
as
on.
Daffodils. Okay, what's your most passionate vegetable? What are you passionate about growing in the garden, vegetable-wise?
Well, for me, it's the potatoes. Mm-hmm. I really love saving potato seeds and growing the same ones over and over. And I have a mix of seed potatoes. They're just seeds because I saved them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the purple ones. They're purple all the way through. Some are white with purple. And I've been growing them for several years, so I don't even know like what varieties they are. And then I do like to grow the potato that we variously call the local native potato.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little red and white one that's a fingerling, and then one that's the rose fin apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably my favorite, is the rose fin apple. But I really like those fingerling potatoes. For how I mostly use potatoes and like roasting them, they're like perfect for me because you can just slice them through, toss them in the pan, in the olive oil, bake them, done.
I would say Yukon Gold is a really favorite. Does well in our climate, and a lot of people like to grow that one in particular if you're looking for a pretty regular, like, you know, you don't want purple potatoes. Not everybody thinks that's appealing. So.
Mm-hmm. I do the multicolored potato salad for 4th of July is pretty fun, though. If you can get your potatoes harvestable by then, it's a pretty cool thing. So potatoes, I mean, we talked about this a little bit. I don't think potatoes are quite as mysterious. And, you know, carrots aren't really mysterious. But potatoes, I dig my bed. I don't lime it. Like I do my other beds, the year I'm going to grow potatoes in that bed, I don't throw lime in with it or wood ash or anything. I want the pH to be a little higher, which isn't usually a challenge here. And then I dig holes, you know, the deranged gopher-looking thing.
So another plant that I really like to grow in the garden is arugula. And one of the reasons is because it's so tasty. And two, it's really hard to transport it. I mean, it's not one that you see for sale very much because it doesn't last very long after mm-hmm. you pick it. So it's really, if you like arugula, it's a great one to grow because you can eat it. You can pick it and eat it that mm-hmm. day. I mean, I've purchased it, but it just, you know, if you don't eat it the day you get it, it's a goner. So, and it's easy. Arugula mm-hmm. is easy, and you can save seed from your arugula. Let a couple of them go to seed, and you'll have seed the next year. So that's a really nice one.
That sounds good. I also like to grow peas, either snap or snow. I like both kinds. This year, I was incredibly good. I need to pat myself on the head. I actually built the pea fence before I planted the peas. This nice. Is a miracle. Usually I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that, and then I don't do it. And there is really no good reason not to put the fence in first. It's just insane not to. So I used to scrap stuff and old netting. So nothing fancy, and a staple gun. Those are my tools. Scrap lumber, you know, like I think I have like 2x2s. And it just plastered all together. I soaked my peas overnight, planted them. They're an inch apart at the most, probably around an inch apart. I don't worry about feeding them nitrogen, but I do make sure that bed gets some phosphorus, which is usually the thing that our soils need.
So what kinds are you growing this year?
Oh, Lord, I knew it was purple. Was it purple night? Good thing I wrote. Okay, I'm working on this. Working.
Okay. Well, so there's roughly two kinds. I mean, we don't tend to have big enough gardens to grow shelling peas. It takes a lot of room to grow shelling peas. Someone will prove me wrong, but that's not generally. So normally people grow either the flat pea pod, the snow pea style, or what we call a snap pea. And a snap pea is one that you can eat both the peas inside and then the pod is edible. And they're so good, both fresh off the vine and also cooked. And then the other thing, if you haven't ever tried it, is the pea vine ends are edible as well. And if you're not getting peas or you're done setting peas and you have some fresh pea vine ends, try those in your salad or your stir fry.
Oh, here we go. One of them was called Sugar Magnolia. You can tell I'm a sucker for names. It's a snap pea. But it has purple pods and regular green peas. So I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I'm going to try that. Because as long as the pods are, you know, as long as it tastes good, I don't really care what color it is. But that just sounded interesting to me. So the garden's going to be quite colorful, I hope. I usually put the peas in the back of a bed, and then I'll grow something in front of them. So there's lettuces and greens and kind of and chard. There's a bunch of mixed things in front of the peas just to make the most use of the space. And I only grow one row of edible peas. That's really enough for me.
Yeah. The other thing to keep in mind about peas is you have to pick them. So, you know, don't wait for a whole lot. As soon as peas look ready, pick them because the plants will bring on more peas as you keep them picked off. So if you can kind of keep on top of that, you'll have a better harvest of peas. And if you're waiting for a whole mealful, just throw them in the freezer and mm-hmm. then get them all out. But I would mm-hmm. say just eat them fresh as they come in your salad or on the side of whatever else you're having.
I think when my kids were little, I never actually got peas in the house to cook. They would eat them as soon as they were, you know, look like peas. They would grab them. The other thing I did this year, which is not exactly a vegetable, but I took another back of a row and put up another pea fence, and I put all of my sweet peas in a row in the vegetable garden. Because, I mean, I really do like a vegetable garden that has some flowers in it, and usually I'll tuck a few nasturtiums or calendulas around. But this year I was like, hey, why not? This is the perfect spot for sweet peas. It's the only spot that I have a big, long space to get that big show. And so I was like, fine.
All right. So back to vegetables.
Oh, yeah,
She's getting off on the flowers.
Sorry.
The other thing I really like to grow is broccoli. And mm-hmm. one of the reasons is that it's so tasty and easy to grow here. And it's not a one-time thing with broccoli. When you cut the head, if you leave the plant there and it has any juice left, it produces all those little side shoots of broccoli, which are really nice to either collect enough up for just a small side or put those in a salad along the rest of the season. So I really like that. And, you know, there are many varieties of broccoli. Some people like to try the broccoli rabe. I like to grow just the regular ones, and I'm not really very picky about which ones I grow. I haven't found, partly my fault for not tracking carefully which ones, but I just never seem to find that one or another is terribly better than the other when they have all these different varieties.
Yeah, I tend to mostly look for shorter day, you know, days to ripening. So usually in the catalog, there's a name, and then there's an F1, F2 sort of thing that talks about whether or not it's hybrid. And then there is days to harvest, and I tend to go for the shorter days to harvest and then just plant them periodically. And I'm like Molly, I mostly grow the regular style broccoli, and I haven't really had one kind that was, overwhelmingly, oh, this is the one. Not to say that that isn't out there, but, and I really do, I like to grow broccoli and cauliflower, and I always like to grow Brussels sprouts too.
I like to grow Brussels sprouts. And one of the main reasons is that that's something to harvest in such a different time of the year. Your Brussels sprouts, you know, it can be well frosty, and then if you've kept the slugs off them enough, that's a perfect time to actually harvest and eat your Brussels sprouts. So, you know, broccoli is a thing of the past by the time you actually eat your Brussels. So to me, they take quite a bit of room in a garden bed. The Brussels sprout plants are big and take a lot of room, but but I like that you get to harvest the vegetable at a different time of year.
I do too. My problem isn't slugs with those. It's deer occasionally. Deer really like Brussels sprouts.
Okay.
So do watch out for that. Keep your eyes open for marauding deer. But again, it's like I kind of tend to use almost the same fertilizer regime for most of my garden. I tend to err on the side of having some nitrogen, but more phosphorus. And usually I put enough kelp in my beds that I don't think they need a lot of potassium. And then I throw in my compost that I've been, you know, kind of saving from kitchen scraps and garden scraps all year long. And when it's finished, I'll throw that in everywhere. Now, I don't expect the compost to be super high in those mega nutrients, in the nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium, but it does have micronutrients in it. So I'm hoping that's what, I mean, it seems to be working so far, knock on wood.
And it's a fantastic soil conditioner. I mean, it's really going to improve the quality, the tilth, as we say, of your soil. Well, there's a couple other things I think are really worth mentioning. If you have a really small garden, these might not be your first choice, but if you have a fair bit of space, both cabbage and cauliflower, you mentioned cauliflower already, good vegetables to grow in our climate. And the cabbages tend to be a little on the later end of harvest, so that's a nice one as well. Cauliflower sort of depends on how sunny you have. It can be late if you don't have a lot of sun. If you have quite a warm or sunnier spot, your cauliflower can be done, can be ready, you know, mid to late season.
I also grow beets is another one. Look at that. Great minds or minds think alike.
Yeah, and beets are great because you can, if you like beet greens, you can have both the beet greens and the beets.
Yes.
One of the fun things about beets is it seems like the varieties actually have some import. I mean, you know, it's like a broccoli is a broccoli to a certain extent, but a beet is maybe a beet, and maybe it's a different kind of beet.
What's your favorite kind of beet?
Well, I've always loved growing cioga, which is the Italian one, and it's just so entertaining. It's not as deep red a beet. It's striped when you cut it across, and it's one that does real well in our climate. Yeah. So that's one I've always liked.
I like cilindra, too, which is a longer, skinnier beet. Those I've done well with, and then boro is the one I have right now. And it looks like it's going to be good. I actually soak my beet seed overnight before I plant them. I don't think that you really have to do that, but it does seem to improve germination if I soak them first. I've seen beet starts available, and I haven't tried that. I was kind of tempted to get some just to see how well they transplant when they're young. I suspect fine as long as they're young enough, but beets are another one because there's multiple seeds in the little thing that looks like a seed, which is really a fruit that you plant. You do have to thin in order to get a nice good beet.
Yeah, that's the thing about beets. And the other thing about beets is that the seed is not viable very long. Mm-mm. So beets are the, if there's only one vegetable you buy fresh seed every year, it's beets. The seed is notorious for not being very long lasting. And as Kitty said, you plant, they're biggish. When you look at them, they look like a rock almost and angular. But that's actually multiple.
Yeah.
That's multiple beets. So you really want to get after those and get it down to, once they germinate, just those two seed leaves and mm-hmm. get rid of anything else
yeah.
that's around it. And your best bet is probably to use a little tiny scissors so that you don't disrupt the root of that little beet seedling.
Yeah, I bought little tiny like cuticle scissors. That's what I've been thinning my seedlings with. And I was going to mention I used them on this flower seedling I have, but I don't want to talk about flowers. the other seed that you want to have fresh are leeks. Leeks is another one that the viability goes down like mad. So I was trying to think, it's like there's also some things to always think about when you're like, we've mentioned some plants that we think do well for us here. You know, there's coal crops, there's peas, there's potatoes, carrots, if you have some sun. There's some plants that are, you know, they need more heat, so you're going to have to do something else if you want to grow those. So it's hard to get by with that we do, in fact, live, you know, in a temperate rainforest. And our summer temperatures are not super high. So take that into account. If you want to grow tomatoes and corn and squash, you need to do something a little different. You need to help them.
I think you need to move away.
Yeah, well, come on. It's a little harsh. A little harsh there, Molly. A little harsh. they need some help. I mean, I have tomatoes. I grow those, but I grow them in a greenhouse. I found a type of summer squash that grows super well for me, but I grow it in kind of a tent thing, and that's Cavilli. It's an Italian one, and I love it, and it produces squash reliably, summer squash reliably, but I protect it from the large amount of rain we get and the cooler temperatures, because those, a lot of the crops that we like to munch on in that group that I mentioned, they need warmer temperatures. There's just no way around it.
Right. So tomatoes actually do fine in a window mm-hmm. in Southeast if you have a pretty good exposure and they can get some sunlight there. You probably want to do some fertilizing, brushing pollen around if you have mm-hmm. them inside and there's no insects or breeze. There's also, you know, I would love to hear from somebody that has done some patio or some container growing mm-hmm. because up on a warm deck, in a sheltered yeah. part of your house or up against a sunny wall,
yeah.
those would be places where it could work out well for growing zucchini, even if you're not
oh, yeah.
in inside a cloche or a greenhouse yeah, or something like that.
Because it is almost too much. I mean, really what I try to do is just protect it from the excess amount of water coming down on it, as opposed to, it doesn't really need to be in a super closed building structure, whatever. And even tomatoes, I've managed to build these really incredibly trashy, I think I can use that word describing my little structures that have worked well. When I knew I was going to be gone for a while, so I couldn't take care of my tomatoes like I should, I'd built like, I don't know, a structure out of Rime and broken greenhouse plastic, you know, just enough to keep them going till it's back and I could put them in, you know, a better spot, and they seem to do okay. But the structures are they're pretty bad looking, but the tomatoes don't actually care what they look like as long as they stay warmer.
Right. Same with the other problem with the squash is it's such a large plant. It takes a lot of room. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like you can just cozy it up into something small. So couple options. Grow them inside to start with and move them out when they mm-hmm. have plenty of size and you can put a cover over the bed, whether it's, I mean, a Rime cover over a raised bed is usually enough
yeah.
to get some zucchinis to grow. The problem is, will the plants themselves outgrow the size of your bed?
Yeah, I managed to find these. They look like little mini plastic houses. And, you know, they're probably about 5 feet long. and a couple of feet wide and probably about 3 feet tall, maybe, about that size. And they're actually have been pretty resilient, and that's what I'll put my zucchini in. And there's not a lot of leftover room. I might get 2 plants in there, and because these are robust plants, but they're producing really nice zucchini. So as long as you like zucchini, it's not like when I grew up in Oregon, you know, zucchini was like, you couldn't give it away. There was so much of it. Here, that's not usually the case. And if I grow too much zucchini, I can usually find someone to take it. It's not a problem. But it's worth it to me to have it in that little house. You can do a lot with zucchini.
So we haven't really talked much about the lettuces and the spinach, and we mentioned kale and Swiss chard, but let's back up a minute to lettuces. Really, lettuce is an easy thing to grow. I know quite a few people like to grow it in a controlled situation just so they don't have to deal with the slugs. Growing lettuce in a container or inside a greenhouse or something, it isn't necessary, but it's awfully nice to go out and, you know, not have a whole lot of work to harvest and clear off the slugs from your lettuce.
Yes, that does not sound delightful at all to me. I feel fairly lucky, although I'm probably going to go home now and find like all my lettuce has been eaten by slugs. Because the big forest slugs will also eat lettuce. I mean, they're not as pesky as having the small ones, but the big ones still, you give them some, you know, vegetable candy and they're going to go for it. I totally agree that growing things like that you know are slug magnets, growing them in a container on your deck makes it so much easier to control. Just to make sure you don't bring slugs in. So if you pack get a container and you don't carefully look through that soil and other stuff in there, you may be bringing slugs to your little container. So don't do that. Check it all out first. Make sure it's clean and then put your greens in there on the deck.
And if you're new to gardening and you're not sure what to make of the endless varieties of lettuces there are to grow, look for one that says it's leaf lettuce. It means you don't have to wait for a head to develop. It's just going to grow leaves, and you can just pick those leaves off whenever they're big enough for your however you want to eat them. So I always like to go with some of those. The head lettuces are great, too. Especially the butter lettuces are unbelievable in how good they taste, and they do pretty well here.
Mm-hmm.
The romaines, I have never had as good luck with those, so I don't tend to go there. But I know you grow some of the romaine style.
I have grown a few of the romaines, and it just depends on the year. Some years they do really well, and what that might really mean is some years I pay enough attention to them and other years I don't. So I've had reasonable luck with those, but probably my favorite to grow are the butterheads. I love those. I've also grown some of the crisp heads, just to see if I could. And they did fine too, although oftentimes they don't wait until either my butterheads or any of them form actual heads. I just like pick the leaves off as I want. So it's like I'm not trying to sell something to a market that looks like a perfect head. So I'll just peel a little bit from it.
But I think that's a nice key, is that you can keep lettuce going for a little while. And by that, I mean pick off leaves and let it grow some more and pick off leaves and grow some more. Some people are successful at cutting them off completely and letting them regrow. The other problem with lettuce is as the season goes on, they tend to be a little more bitter, and you might like to just plant lettuce and eat it while it's young and fresh and replant a couple of times. And especially if you're content with leaf lettuces, they don't need much of a season, and you're not trying to get them to be ahead anyway.
No, I started some lettuce ahead in containers just because. Not because I needed to, but because it was still too cold outside for my lettuces to do super well. So I started some out there, but I've just planted more seed again outside so that those will come on as the other ones are getting done. And you do kind of want to have this continuous pile of lettuce. That just sounds really good. I really like having my vegetable garden right outside my front door. because I just, there is nothing more satisfying. Well, maybe there's some things, but it's super satisfying to walk out and just pick a few things and then walk into your house and eat them or eat them in the yard. But it's just, I love that feeling. So plant your vegetable garden someplace you can get at it.
So same with spinach. Mm-hmm. Spinach is really easy to grow. Some are bigger leaved, some are littler leaved. I don't have any great success one way or another in terms of varieties. So whatever spinach you have to hand, I think it's easy and yummy.
And the most reliable, not quite spinach for not bolting or not going to flower too soon is that New Zealand spinach. So if you've had trouble with spinach bolting and you're getting tired of that, just grow New Zealand spinach.
Which isn't really spinach.
Right, but it has that same sort of feel to it. And then another one I have in my yard is French sorrel, which is a perennial that I have to divide up and pass around because it does really well. But it's ready to eat. It's been ready to eat for the last, month and a half, if not a little more. So good stuff. So
those are probably the easier to grow, easy to have success with vegetables to grow. But there are a few other quirky ones. You mentioned leeks earlier, which mm-hmm. are not particularly quirky, but we know you have to start really early if you want to get them to productivity. A couple other ones that do well in our area might not be as mainstream are the kohlrabis, and a garden kohlrabi, really yummy. They look like an alien planet, but they're very tasty and they're pretty easy to grow here.
They do grow well here.
The daikons grow really mm-hmm. well here. So those big white mm-hmm. Radishes that you find in Asian cooking, those do well here. And then fennel can grow quite well here as also if you want to try another thing that's fairly unusual.
We didn't talk about regular radishes. I mean, regular radishes grow super well here as long as you keep the little root maggots away from them.
If you've got some rime, people are already harvesting radishes. So and you can start them multiple times across the summer.
And if you have a small child, I mean, my kids loved planting and picking radishes. It was very satisfying. They didn't necessarily want to eat them, but they did like planting and picking them. And there's so many different colors out there of radishes. Starburst was one of my favorite new discoveries. It's white on the outside and red on the inside. Very cool. I enjoyed that one.
I like the purple ones, of course.
Yes. So we haven't even scraped the surface in some ways. Talked about fava beans and onions quite a bit with Keith a couple of weeks ago. So I hope you caught that show because those are other crops that he's growing and quite successfully. There's just no
parsnips. Also, you can certainly grow parsnips here.
I don't know why you'd
want
to.
Some of the onions, as you mentioned. I would say we'll do a very short and not too disparagingly list of things that you probably don't want to try. Now, there's always the exception to the rule. So
cantaloupes?
I would say skip the cantaloupes, skip the watermelons, skip the pumpkins, skip the corn, skip the okra, skip the tomatillos, skip the eggplants.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, but you got to give them up. Well, you don't have to, and if you have a greenhouse.
Peppers you can probably get away with if you have a greenhouse. And I would say, just wait for fall and buy some beautiful winter squash from somebody else. And
the same has a more suitable climate.
And the same with sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
So, right?
Yeah.
Regular potatoes, no problem. But sweet potatoes, we really don't have enough heat for.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I mean, I guess the bottom line is we live in a place with cool summers. And, we get some warm days. It's not like we don't get any warm days, but our warm days are not really that warm for plants. Soils tend to be relatively wet, and our soils tend to be low pH. So you kind of have to work with those basic parameters to be able to grow vegetables. Oh, one more thing I really wanted to say, and this is about nutrients. You do need to add some nitrogen to your soil. But the bigger thing is probably phosphorus. So I looked up the Cooperative Extension's recommended sort of ratio. And for our area, it's like an 8, 32, 16. So the 8 is the nitrogen, 8% nitrogen, 32% phosphorus, and 16% potassium.
And if you're buying commercial fertilizer, that's often called Alaska.
Yep, it's the Alaska mix. And then, you know, what you really probably don't need to add to your soil is peat moss. She's staring at me like I'm crazy.
Well, we've talked about this in the past, but not recently. So for a long time, peat moss was a regular thing sold in garden stores to be a way to add a moisture-holding component to soil. One, we don't need to hold moisture most of the time. And two, to add organic matter to your soil. So it has both of those characteristics. Neither of which we really need that much. I mean, yes, if you're growing intensively in a raised bed, over time the organic component of that soil will disappear. So you do need to add more organics, but your compost, your seaweed, your manures,
right, are much better choices.
The brewery waste, your coffee grounds, all of those things are really great choices for your organics. And the other reason not to buy and use peat moss is that it's mined and it's not really a renewable resource at the rate that we are probably taking it out of historical peat bogs.
Right.
So if you come from a garden legacy where peat moss was the way to go, we would just encourage you to let that go as you find a new way to garden in Southeast
Alaska.
That's
right. So switch it up a little bit. Yeah, peat moss doesn't add really any nutrients at all, where all those other forms of organic matter at least adds something to your soil in terms of organic matter and nutrients.
And there's one other bad thing about peat moss is it usually contributes to the acidic side of, you know, creating, lowering the pH. In other words, trending toward it being more acidic. And that's why we add lime, is that our soils tend to be acidic and we're trying to get them to a more neutral place. So peat won't help you with that either.
No. So grow lots of things and enjoy your garden, I would say. There's a lot of options for vegetables here that grow. There's a lot of options for flowers here that'll grow. Just stick with things that will deal well with our cooler temperatures, and I think you will be a much more satisfied gardener.
And grow exactly what you want to eat. No point in growing something that you don't really like.
Unless you want to trade it. But yes, that's usually not the case.
All right, thanks so much for having me in on the Pop-Up Garden Show.
Thanks, Molly. And we will let you all know when we'll be back for another garden show. Thanks so much. And we will go back to some music.